From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Gelton, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Today, yet another new twist in the Russia investigation story. We now have a special counsel in charge, Robert Mueller, the former FBI director under Presidents Bush and Obama. Ramrod straight, they say. He's already hiring investigators. And guess what? There is bipartisan agreement in Congress, finally. Republicans and Democrats alike say they're happy. President Trump, not so much. He tweeted this morning that the investigation amounts to, quote, the single greatest witch hunt of a politician in American history. This hour on Point, the Russia investigation and the new special counsel. You can join us on air or online. What do you think this means? Do you think justice will be done here? Do you think President Trump is being hounded unfairly, as he says? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter or on Facebook at On Point Radio. And later this hour, Roger Ailes has died at 77. Joining me now from Washington is Zeke Miller, White House correspondent for Time magazine. Zeke, thanks very much for making time for us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Tom.
Also in Washington, Susan Hennessy joins us. She's a fellow in national security law at the Brookings Institution, also managing editor of the Lawfare blog, which has become must-read for its analysis of the legal twists and turns in this story. You can find links to her writing on Lawfare on our website, onpointradio.org. And Susan, thanks to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Susan, let's begin with you. You know, the Democrats are talking about a special prosecutor. We now have a special counsel. Is there any distinction here between special prosecutor and special counsel?
Right. So special prosecutor, it was the term that was used under the now-lapsed independent counsel statute. This is a little bit different. So this, because that former statute has lapsed since 1999, the way that these special counsels, as they're called, are appointed are through Department of Justice regulations. So in some sense, they perform the same function, but there are some meaningful differences. A special counsel does still report to the Attorney General, or for this matter, the Deputy Attorney General, since Attorney General Jeff Sessions is recused. So there's a potentially a lesser degree of independence, and the mechanism through which he's appointed is somewhat different than that of a special prosecutor as it used to exist.
Right. And Zeke Miller, what is the reaction at the White House to this announcement? I read the tweet. President Trump still thinks that there's a witch hunt going on. But does the appointment of a special counsel, and in particular Robert Mueller himself, how is that seen at the White House, do you think?
Well, there are two things. There's the White House and then there's the president. The White House, broadly, the people who work there, saw this coming. Really, the clock started on this a week ago when President Trump asked Rod Rosenstein to draft that memo that led to former FBI Director Comey's firing. So they saw this coming. They were trying to prepare the president for this. The challenge is the person who lives in the White House had a very different expectation here, didn't think this was going to happen, and views any investigation into Russia, the whole Russia investigation, as a threat to his legitimacy as president. So he lashes out the same way we just saw him on Twitter. All throughout the day, the tweets just keep coming from him. The White House statement released on Wednesday night was far more sober, but we're getting the honest reaction now from the president.
And a statement after I think this announcement was made says a thorough investigation will confirm what we already know. There was no collusion between my campaign and any foreign entity. I look forward to this matter concluding quickly. Was that statement from the White House press office then, Zeke?
Oh, well, yeah, that statement was put out in the name of President Donald Trump.
Right.
But it doesn't sound like the Donald Trump that we know and hear from on any given basis. That is certainly that's what the staff wanted the president to say. So that's what they put out under his name. Certainly the president speaks for himself on Twitter, as we've seen over and over and over again. So I think that would be a far more honest reflection of where the president's head is at.
Well, Susan, let's talk a little bit about Robert Mueller. You were a general counsel in the intelligence community at the NSA, I believe. Robert Mueller was FBI director in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, and his tenure at the FBI was really shaped by all those years of leading the counterterrorism effort, no?
Yeah, so Mueller is probably one of, if not the most respected sort of law enforcement figures in recent American history. He was appointed by President Bush to be his FBI director. Actually, President Obama requested that Congress pass a special law in order to allow Mueller to continue to serve for an extra 2 years. So he served actually 12 years, not the 10-year term. Tenure was really shaped by a number of very high-profile events that demonstrated sort of the degree of integrity and independence. He was involved in the episode that also sort of shaped Jim Comey's early reputation of sort of standing up to the White House regarding legal interpretations of particular surveillance programs. So he really has immense stature and credibility for being someone of just a lot of integrity.
Well, let's consider now how members of Congress are reacting to this news. First, we can hear from Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff of California. He, of course, is the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee. And here's what he had to say on the appointment of Robert Mueller as special counsel.
The question is whether the results will be accepted by the public. And I think there's a far greater chance with a truly independent counsel conducting this, and particularly someone of the stature of Bob Mueller, that the public is more likely to accept the result.
And now for the Republican side, Congressman Daryl Issa told reporters that former FBI Director Robert Mueller is a good choice to serve as special counsel.
We don't want to have 5 or 6 months of nothing while an organization spins up. You want this to be somebody that can hit the ground running and can be accountable in a matter of weeks to the oversight of Congress.
And Zeke Miller, this is a rare moment where we have this kind of bipartisan reaction, very similar statements from both Republicans and Democrats. What I'm wondering is how long this can last. If Robert Mueller finds, for example, no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, will Democrats accept that and move on? Conversely, if he does find some evidence of collusion, will Republicans accept that and deal with the consequences? What's your guess?
I mean, this is Washington, so party politics will always be at the fore of everything. I mean, what's most notable is that even some of the same Republicans who are out praising Bob Mueller just days before were saying there was no need for a special prosecutor. But when he was named for a special counsel, but when Mueller was named, they had no choice but to praise him. At the end of this investigation, as this investigation seems to be going on for a very long time, we're going to continue to see pot shots from Capitol Hill at that investigation, no matter who is running it. And of course, Congress is going to continue their parallel investigations. So party politics will be there. Will they accept the outcome? It's probably too soon to tell. Certainly, if there's anyone in Washington who can lead this investigation credibly and try that could get to an outcome that both parties could accept, no matter what it is, it's Bob Mueller. The question is Washington already so fundamentally broken that ship has already sailed?
And Susan Hennessy, you mentioned that Robert Mueller and James Comey have a history themselves. In fact, they are friends, right? And given what some of the terrible things that President Trump has said about Jim Comey in the last couple of weeks, what does that mean for the way he's likely to see Comey's good friend Robert Mueller?
Certainly Comey and Mueller have a long-standing professional relationship as well as a personal friendship. That said, I think it's likely that Mueller will really try and approach him as much as possible, sort of a witness in this investigation, right? So one of the major questions will be the conduct surrounding the firing of Comey himself. Excuse me. So it is a little bit of a tricky or difficult situation he's in, and I think he's going to take a lot of steps in order to preserve the appearance of sort of independence. That said, certainly, Mueller has is likely to share the expectations and responses of lots of people, in Washington and across the country who were shocked by the firing of Comey, understood how significant a transgression of really foundational norms had occurred there, how unusual it is to fire an FBI director, and is also going to be looking at that situation with some degree of suspicion, perhaps out of some sense of personal loyalty to Comey. There's also a credibility gap there, right? So we've seen that Comey it's now been reported, documented his conversations with the president, apparently kept detailed notes, including some that are classified. There's now going to be a question about whether or not those notes accurately reflect conversations, or whether or not the president's statements, right? Now he's already said that that's not Comey's, is not an accurate description of what was said, and so certainly he's going to be looking through, looking at those representations through the lens of someone who has a lot of experience of Jim Comey and his reputation for credibility and honesty over time, versus Donald Trump, who really has very little at this point.
Yeah. And Zeke Miller, another big question is, Susan referred to notes. There are possible tapes. Who knows what other documents? Now, Robert Mueller will be able to subpoena those or request those documents and tapes. Any idea whether the White House will be more forthcoming with Robert Mueller than they perhaps would have been with or would be with the House and Senate investigations?
No, it's certainly a little too soon to tell there. The White House has been very cagey what records, what tapes it potentially might be out there. Over and over again, Press Secretary Sean Spicer has been asked if there were any recordings of those conversations, and he's declined to say, speaking on behalf of the president, that he doesn't want to go any further. So it's really, we don't know yet.
This is On Point. I'm Tom Gelton, in for Tom Ashbrook, and we're trying to figure out what the appointment of a special counsel means for the nation, for our politics, and for the president himself. You can join the conversation. Will this quiet things down, allow Washington to get back to the business of governing, allow Republicans to focus on their agenda, or did we just see more oil poured on the political fires now raging in Washington? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And we have one comment that has come in via our website. This is from Ed. He says, it seems the wrong lesson is taken from Watergate. In Watergate, Nixon only had to resign when the Republicans accepted his guilt, and that only happened when the evidence was clear and there weren't enough votes for impeachment without the Republicans. And there aren't enough votes for impeachment now until the evidence is clear and they've found nothing so far. It's not going to happen. And now we're going to continue this conversation with our guest, Zeke Miller. He's the White House correspondent for Time magazine, and Susan Hennessy, a fellow in national security law at the Brookings Institution and managing editor of the Lawfare blog. And I'd like to bring in a third voice as well. Benjamin Dominich is founder and publisher of the conservative online journal The Federalist. He joins us from Alexandria, Virginia. Ben, thanks very much for making time for us today.
Good to be with you today.
So, Ben, what's your reaction? What's your take on this news that that the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, has now appointed a special counsel and none other than Robert Mueller to lead?
You know, it's an interesting development, of course, and I think that it's one that certainly in the short term will resolve, I think, some of the questions that have been raised in recent weeks and months. And I think it really is kind of a natural progression from the fact that there was a real lack of trust for the current investigation that was happening at the FBI, both by people who distrusted Comey from the left and from the right when it came to running an investigation, given the experience that he had when it came to investigating Hillary Clinton. I think that this is kind of a reassertion that we're going to have someone responsible in charge of this, a person who is charged with looking into this. But I also think that in the long term, what we've seen in the past from these types of special prosecutors and counsels is that they tend to go far afield from their original from their original focus. Obviously, the experience that led to the indictment of Scooter Libby when it came to the investigation there was unrelated to the original focus of the Patrick Fitzgerald investigation under George W. Bush. So it could be a situation where, in the short term, Republicans have an answer for questions related to this. Well, the special counsel is going to be looking into that, and we'll see what his findings are. But in the long term, it may end up going farther afield than just looking at this singular issue.
Well, how much does the appointment of Mueller himself sort of mute the incredibly polarized debate? I mean, it's just been depressing to hear how polarized this debate has come. And now there is this bipartisan praise for Mueller. Is that is the confidence in Mueller himself enough to sort of keep this, the polarization under control for a little while, do you think?
I think it may tamp down on it temporarily, but keep in mind that what you're going to read this week in terms of hagiography is about how talented, professional, and reasonable Mueller is going to be tempered by what his findings are. So what you should expect to see is that if he finds that there are real cases against potentially, Michael Flynn or others, that's one thing. But again, the way that he progresses in this investigation, if it turns out that his findings don't satisfy Democrats on Capitol Hill, they'll point to the fact that he, served mostly under Republicans and has close ties with a number of them. On the flip side, if his findings are discomforting for Republicans on Capitol Hill, they'll point to his close relationship and friendship with James Comey. So I think it's temporarily going to tamp down on this, but ultimately it's his findings that are going to, be processed through our political partisan system and reacted to according to which tribe you're a part of.
Donald Trump tweeted this morning, with all of the illegal acts that took place in the Clinton campaign and the Obama administration, there was never a special counsel appointed. Clearly, Donald Trump is not feeling really great about this appointment, Ben.
No, I don't think that he does. But at the same time, I think that there's going to be a bit of a game to play here. Donald Trump certainly likes to play the victim. He likes to call things like this witch hunts. At the same time, I have to say that anyone who expects that we're going to have some incredible revelation under Mueller's investigation, I haven't really seen the indication of that. We are talking about a president who openly asked for the Russians to release the emails that they had gathered from the DNC and from Hillary Clinton, and I doubt that we're going to find some secret conversation involving him that says anything clearer than that. At the same time, the president really does seem to enjoy depicting himself as being a victim of circumstance and comparing himself to previous administrations, basically saying that, he is suffering more and being treated more poorly than any prior president. And I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon.
And Ben, remind us, you mentioned the Patrick Fitzgerald investigation that ultimately resulted in charges against Scooter Libby. Remind us of the context to that. And your point there was that investigation sort of went in a different direction than was originally intended.
Sure. Sure. Just to very briefly sum up a complicated situation there, that investigation stemmed from the exposure of the identity of a particular operative, in this case, Valerie Plame. But Libby was not actually the fellow who ended up being found to have disclosed that identity to a Washington journalist, Bob Novak. In fact, he was essentially caught in a situation of where he had perjured himself in the context of that investigation, something that really was not a crime that had predated it. And I think that you could potentially see a similar situation here. We know that they're going to be looking into Michael Flynn, Paul Manafort, Carter Page, potentially others, associates of the president who are obviously now no longer in the White House or in the administration. And it really is going to be, I think, an open question of whether they're able to get them on some other particular aspect of what they did wrong. For instance, failing to accurately report payments that they had received from foreign entities that might not even include Russia. And in Flynn's case, it could include a country like Turkey. And those are the types of things we see crop up in investigations like these time and again, where the original thing that they're focused on actually turns out to be lesser than the actual crime or violation that they find over the course of it.
Boy, all very unpredictable, uncharted territory we have just plunged into, isn't it?
Ben, stay with us for just a minute more. Let's go to the phones now. Leslie is on the line from Asheville, North Carolina. Ashley, thanks for calling On Point.
Hi, Tom.
And what are your thoughts about this announcement, a special counsel, Robert Mueller in charge?
I've got to say that it's one of the first times in the last few months where I kind of went, oh, okay, we're making progress. Adults are moving forward as they should. And I found it interesting that you framed it in terms of Republicans are happy, Democrats are happy, and Donald Trump is unhappy and stating that this is a witch hunt, which leaves me scratching my head once again and going, my goodness, this is a moment where there's an opportunity for real presidential leadership and saying, okay, great, there are questions about things. Let's investigate. Let's get some answers. You know, speaking to the qualifications of the person who's been chosen to lead this investigation and instead choosing to use the word witch hunt, which just as the previous person speaking, Ben, stated, you know, it's again, to me, just feels like a real lack of maturity and lack of leadership, lack of seizing on an opportunity to reframe things and instead calling into question the very system of democracy that has been created to uphold the faith of the American people and the faith of the world that human beings can work together and solve some problems.
Yeah. Okay. Zeke Miller, I think it's important to attribute what President Trump said correctly. It wasn't necessarily clear to me that when he said that there is a witch hunt underway, that he's referring to Robert Mueller himself. How did you interpret that, as opposed to sort of the whole controversy around his dealings or his campaign's dealing with Russia?
Yeah, he didn't really say exactly what he was speaking about, but presumably this was influenced by something he had seen on cable television, as has been the pattern, and certainly colored by that latest development. But certainly a witch hunt is how the president views the entire Russian investigation, maybe not specifically the special counsel here, but that's why it took the President Trump so long to acknowledge, you know, what every intelligence agency had confirmed last year, that Russia had hacked the DNC, had hacked John Podesta's emails. The collusion issue aside, I mean, the obvious steps by Russia that they took last year that were widely reported on, he refused to accept because he didn't want to believe it, and he believed, and in his mind, that Russia taking steps to hurt Hillary Clinton and help him somehow made him less of a president. And so that's how he colors it in his own head. And that's why you see every time there's a headline about Russia, we see a reflexive tweet or some other statement where he calls it a witch hunt or some other derogatory term, despite the fact that, you know, we already know some of the basic fact pattern here is very well established. The collusion question is a separate one. But separate from that, we know that this isn't a witch hunt.
Right. Susan Hennessy, one of the things that interests me about having so much of the focus now on Robert Mueller, a former FBI director, former prosecutor, is which questions he is likely to answer and which ones maybe don't interest him so much. I mean, there is the question of whether Russia tried to influence our election and what they were able to do and whether Americans assisted. Then there is a narrower issue of whether laws were broken and whether indictments are in order. Do you see Robert Mueller and the focus now on his investigation as answering all those questions or sort of the narrow criminal questions only?
Right. So it's important to sort of distinguish between the purpose of congressional investigations, which will proceed and are separate issues that are going to be more geared towards making information public. Clearly, we'll have more of sort of a political or partisan slant to them. And that sort of a legislative purpose of communicating with the American people. This investigation is an FBI investigation. It's a counterintelligence and criminal investigation. And so actually the ultimate findings will not be public unless there are criminal charges. Ben mentioned some of the issues with special prosecutors in the past sort of getting out of their lane and being perceived as overzealous. One driver of that was under the former independent counsel law. There was a public report at the end. There's not going to be a public report here. Any of those closing documentation, right, that will be secret. So really what Mueller is going to be focused on is the narrow scope of his jurisdiction. Rod Rosenstein's order says that he is going to be investigating the investigation that Jim Comey testified in front of the HPSI. And he says that that's an investigation into the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the presidential election and the nature of any links of individuals associated, yeah, between Trump and the Russian government. So that's really where his focus is going to be. If people commit crimes in the course of that investigation, say by lying to federal investigators, he'll also investigate, yeah, any issues that arise.
Okay, that's Susan Hennessy. She's managing editor of the Lawfare blog. I'm Tom Gelton. This is On Point. And let's now go to Greg, who's calling us today from Ridgeway, South Carolina. Hello, Greg. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. What we're really seeing here is a continued descent of our dysfunctional government. I haven't heard any of the callers seem to be terribly upset with the fact that they're not doing the country's business anymore. It's just become a giant fight club. I watched this with President Obama brawling with the Congress. Now I see them brawling with President Trump. And President Trump really doesn't have an ally as our traditional politicians, because he kind of comes from outside the Republican Party. So he's not really a member of the club. But the end game of this is going to be, we're not going to get business done, and we're going to have real trouble attracting quality candidates for the presidency in the future, just because they see that it's not going to be a chance to run your leadership and all. You're just another combatant in the cage.
So, Greg, would you say that this whole investigation and all the questions that have been raised are distracting the country from more important things to do?
Oh, absolutely, Tom. You know that as well as I do. We're not getting business done. And if you talk to anybody about what our government's up to, you've got a polarized country worried about the status of the current cage match and who the title players are. And now we're bringing in more people to the fight. So, you know, the business isn't getting done. I'm enraged because it's not getting done. And we're going to see this continue. We've already seen a history of it, and the future looks even more grim.
Well, Ben Domenech, that's, I'm sure, a popular feeling among a lot of people that voted for President Trump.
I certainly think it is. I think that they're frustrated that they haven't seen his legislative agenda at least move with the kind of speed that they'd like him to. I mean, the reality is that the Republicans in Congress are a year and a half from having to stand for election again in the midterms, and they're looking at they're looking around at the agenda that they've wanted to get going under President Trump, under united government in the House and the Senate, and they're frustrated that it hasn't moved faster than its current pace. They've wanted to get health care reform done, tax reform done. They've wanted to get additional bills passed, and they haven't really been able to get the momentum that they've needed with it, in part because the White House has been so distracted by the focus on this investigation and the questions coming out of it, that it hasn't been able to provide the kind of leadership that you typically expect from a president who comes into office with a good degree of momentum behind him. I don't think that that's going to change anytime soon, and I don't think that a special counsel in this case is going to change that. In the short term, it may remove some of the pressure, some of the stress of the questions that we've seen in the last couple of weeks and months, but I don't think that it's going to be enough to get their legislative agenda going to the degree that the people who supported President Trump really wanted to see it go.
And Zeke Miller, very quickly, the White House can't be confident that this is going to end anytime soon.
No, they know this is going to go on for a long time, and they're not happy about it.
Right. Well, I want to thank all three of you for taking the time for us to go over this latest development in the ongoing saga of the Russia investigation and any evidence of collusion between President Trump and his campaign and Russia. Benjamin Domenech, founder and publisher of the journal The Federalist. Thanks to you, Ben.
Thank you.
And Zeke Miller, who is the White House correspondent for Time Magazine. Thanks to you, Zeke, for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you for having me.
Finally, Susan Hennessy. She's a fellow in national security law at the Brookings Institution, managing editor of the Lawfare blog, which is essential reading for anyone trying to follow this story. Susan, my thanks to you.
Thanks so much.
And when we come back, we're going to take a look at the long, often controversial career of Roger Ailes, who died this morning at 77. Listeners, will you miss him? Do you see a new day for the news network he created, Fox News? I'm Tom Gelton, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
I'm Tom Gelton, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Roger Ailes, the man who more than any other created Fox News and a new kind of politics in America, died this morning at 77. He lost his job last summer as a series of sexual harassment scandals hammered him and his network. We're going to take a few minutes now to consider his impact on American journalism and politics and women in the workplace. You can join us on air or online. What do you see as the legacy of Roger Ailes? Join us at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And now joining us, we have two top-notch media reporters from Washington, Hadass Gold, media reporter for Political. Welcome, Hadass.
Hello.
Hi. And from New York, Brian Stelter, senior media correspondent for CNN and the host of Reliable Sources. Brian, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Busy day for both of you, I'm sure. Brian, what more can you tell us about this really shocking development about Roger Ailes' death? Do we know any more about why and how he died?
We don't have a specific cause of death, but he had been ill for a number of years, on and off, even before he resigned in disgrace from Fox News last summer. He had recently been splitting time between his homes in Florida and New York, and we don't have an official cause of death yet.
And Hadass, I'm sure that you have no more information than Brian does.
No, we don't, but Brian is correct in that he has been ill. Actually, in an authorized biography that was published a few years ago, he acknowledged his failing health and sort of darkly joked that he maybe had 6 years left or so, and that was, I would say, just about 5 years ago.
Brian, do you have any insight into what the impact of this controversy has been on Ailes himself? How did he take this? Did this, was this something that really set him back? I know he had a huge financial settlement coming out of it, but it must have been pretty devastating to hear all these awful things said about him at the time when he was let go.
Ailes' life changed dramatically 10 months ago when he was resigning from Fox News, losing the network that he had built really almost out of nothing with financial support from Rupert Murdoch, but entirely with his vision and his television expertise. Ailes was relatively isolated in recent months, not communicating with some longtime friends and colleagues. The settlements and the lawsuits were all still piling up. There were a number of lawsuits pending at the time of his death, and there's an ongoing federal investigation into Fox News, really into the Ailes era, into the idea that the settlement payments may have been covered up, into the idea that they were trying to intimidate and bully people and using inappropriate tactics, maybe employing Ailes' friends on the payroll in devious ways. There's a lot we don't know about that investigation, but the fact that it exists and it's been going on for months speaks to Ailes' complicated legacy, that he helped a lot of people, helped a lot of careers, changed television as we know it, but also hurt a lot of people at the same time.
Well, let's hear now from the most high-profile person who was affected by Roger Ailes herself. This is from last November. Then Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly appeared on CBS, not Fox, CBS This Morning, to discuss her sexual harassment allegations against Roger Ailes. She said that these started in 2005, shortly after she started working at the network.
Roger was like a king at Fox News. This was not somebody you would take on lightly. I'd been at the company for 12 months. But take my situation out of it, right? I mean, I had been a lawyer, so I knew how to handle it. But I think most women who this happens to have no clue what to do. Mm-hmm. They're just scared. And like me, they just want it to stop.
Now, Hadass Gold, this obviously, the stories of sexual harassment at the hands, so to speak, of Roger Ailes really impacted women beyond the news business, right?
Oh, definitely, because he, like Megyn Kelly said in that clip, he was considered a king. He was considered untouchable. And a lot of when Gretchen Carlson came out with her lawsuit and that it actually resulted in some consequences, a lot of women across industries, and especially though in the media industry, reacted and said, wow, this, you know, you can actually have an effect if you speak up, and that this we can actually enact some sort of change. And now Gretchen Carlson has turned it into sort of her, the next phase of her career is her life mission is to speak up about workplace sexual assault.
Well, let's hear from Gretchen Carlson. She, in November 2016, she talked about dealing with sexual harassment in the workplace on ABC's 2020. Because of her $20 million settlement with Fox News, she said she could not discuss details of her actual allegations against Roger Ailes, but she spoke more generally. Here's ABC's Amy Robach.
Do you feel like you've won?
I can't answer specifically about whether or not I won in that specific case. But, boy, I hope I've helped other women to win.
And, you know, Brian Stelter, this is something that I think that's important to keep in mind, that for all the controversy that has surrounded Fox News because of its political or ideological slant, really, that has not been part of this story at all. This is all the controversy around Roger Ailes, correct me if I'm wrong, has really been about the allegations against him for sexual harassment, not
that's
his
right.
politics.
That's right, about his personal conduct in the office behind closed doors. There were many people at Fox News who said they had no idea this was going on, that these women were being harassed inside Ailes' office. At the same time, there could have been willful blindness, people choosing not to know, choosing to look the other way. There's a lot we don't know about that, and that's partly why this federal investigation is taking place, and these lawsuits are still pending. Talking about Ailes, we have to hold multiple thoughts in our head at the same time. He was a television genius who really did change America. I don't use those words lightly. And whether you think he changed America for the better or the worse, it depends a lot on your political persuasion. He created this alternate universe for conservatives in the U.S. Fox News is a virtual public square for the GOP. Before Fox, it was really just talk radio for that. And now there's an entire channel and an entire apparatus for it. So he's affected our politics in profound ways. I would even argue we wouldn't have President Trump if it weren't for Roger Ailes. So he had this immense impact on the culture. At the same time, behind the scenes, women would describe him engaging in incredibly inappropriate things. He could be bold and brash, he could be brilliant, but he could also be profane and crass and inappropriate. All those things were true at the same time.
You know, and I think that we have to keep all these things in mind as we consider the legacy of Roger Ailes, not only what his tenure at Fox News meant for women, but also, as you say, the impact he's had on our political process. I mean, take this line from the Mark Fisher's obit in the Washington Post for Roger Ailes. He mastered the art of selling political candidates like Hollywood celebrities and was the architect of conservative-oriented TV news. Hadass, he had huge impact on how we carry out elections.
Oh, I mean, and he had impact also in the past on helping elect behind the scenes at least three presidents. And it was said that in Republican politics, if you wanted to be a high-level Republican politician, if you wanted to become president, you had to go through Fox News. If Fox News had not sort of made up with Donald Trump during the 2016 election, would it have been different? I don't know. I was on a panel very recently with some French journalists, and they were all noting that they were wondering, had the French election turned out differently if France had had its own version of a sort of Fox News? And it really, you can't underestimate the impact that Fox has had, especially on Republican politics. You hear sometimes from Republican members of Congress or Republican political operatives who sort of at some points have complained about the grip that the network has had sort of on Republican politics. It's not clear if that's going to change anytime soon. Clearly, their influence has continued beyond Roger Ailes, and what he built has clearly will have some sort of lasting effect.
Well, Brian, how has Fox News changed already in the aftermath of Roger Ailes' tenure there, if it has?
I would say it's changed around the margins. What Fox would tell you if a spokesperson for Murdoch was here, they would say, we've improved the culture. We've instituted sexual harassment training. We've had sensitivity training. We've made sure everybody knows how to contact HR if there's a problem. We are making changes. How true that is, I don't know, and not being on the inside of Fox News. But the Murdochs say they've addressed some of the cultural problems of the Ailes era. You know, just yesterday, what a strange twist of fate. They announced yesterday a newsroom renovation at Fox News. Brand new multi-million-dollar newsroom. It's going to take months to build. And what are they doing? They're literally tearing down Ailes' old office and all of the offices around him, almost as if it had been a stain on the network that had to be removed. Mm. So he created this thing. He gained more and more and more power, maybe to the point that he thought he was untouchable and no one could ever take him down. And it wasn't until women, beginning with Gretchen Carlson, spoke up that there were changes. But I would say those changes have mostly been off the air in terms of sexual harassment training and things like that. We've not seen a dramatic change in the tone on Fox News. The primetime lineup is reliably, consistently pro-Trump and also anti-media, anti the rest of the media. And that'll continue as long as people are watching by the millions.
Well, Brian or Hadass, have either of you been monitoring Fox News today to see what commentators and anchors are saying about Ailes?
Well, this morning, the Fox and Friends anchors broke the news on the network, actually citing Drudge Report initially. And you could definitely hear the emotion in the co-anchors' voices as they were announcing this news. You have to understand that this man has a very complicated legacy, and while a lot of people at Fox will recognize that he might have had inappropriate relations with women, and obviously it was unacceptable if the allegations against him and how it all went out was very just unpleasant overall, that for a lot of these people, they owe their careers to this man and that he really changed the television landscape. So you're seeing from a lot of people, also even former Fox anchors, I heard Major Garrett earlier on CBS, who he was at Fox for a while, kind of acknowledging and giving credit to this person. At the same time, we have to balance out with what happened behind the scenes and how that directly affected a lot of lives of a lot of women.
And let's go now to Steve, who's on the line from Canton, Ohio. Steve, I'm sure you, like many of our listeners, are familiar with what's been on Fox News over the years. What are your thoughts today?
Hello, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I believe Mr. Ailes, and I hate to berate a man who's just died, but I believe his legacy will not be a good one. I believe that Fox News is a propaganda machine. It's basically, they stretch facts, they ignore other important facts that don't coincide with the case they want to make, and they've become, you know, a wing of the Tea Party and some of the extremists in the GOP, unfortunately. And I've voted for Republican candidates before, but you know, the party that my first election, I voted for George H.W. Bush, and regrettably, reasonable candidates like him won't even get any airtime now, you know, from somebody, you know, from a network like Fox. And that's not even getting into some of the, you know, sexual harassment claims, which, you know, regrettably will be a stain on who he was.
And thank you, Steve. I'm Tom Gelton, and this is On Point. And Brian, do you think that the impact of Roger Ailes on television news has had any implications for television news more generally? I mean, he certainly took Fox News in a pretty deliberate direction ideologically. Since then, we have seen, it seems to me, a somewhat more of a political slant on other cable news channels as well.
Television has been Foxified to some degree, even the colors and the look of the channels. You know, in the mid-1990s, before Fox News was launched, there was really just CNN on cable news. That was all. Then MSNBC and Fox News launched, and Ailes had a different vision for how it should look and how it should feel. Bold, sometimes scary graphics, Fox News alerts, terror warning labels on screen. Ailes would sometimes tell his staff to turn the volume down and just watch the screen without the sound. Mm. He could judge it without having to hear the words, which means he couldn't hear the journalism or hear the opinion. He was judging how the anchors looked and how the graphics looked and what it felt like to watch. And I would actually argue to this day, you could see the impact of that on Fox's air as I'm looking at it right now. Even right now, the colors are bolder, more dramatic, scary even, compared to other news channels. So Ailes had that kind of view of television. He once said to me when I was new at CNN and I told him I was having a hard time with the camera, with the teleprompter, he said, don't work for the equipment. Make the equipment work for you. Move the camera closer if you have to. Do whatever you have to do. That was his view of talent, that it was all about the star, all about the television star, whether it was Bill O'Reilly or Megyn Kelly or Sean Hannity. And he helped many of their careers, even at the same time he allegedly harassed women like Kelly.
So, Brian, you found that advice helpful, I guess.
I did. I remember the first time I met him in the mid-2000s. I was at Fox News headquarters, and he came, kind of bulldozing into the office that I happened to be sitting in. He was a larger-than-life figure for everybody who was around him. He could be intimidating, he could be frightening, but he could also be very friendly and incredibly charming. And those are sort of, that's why I feel this morning such has a complicated history, a complicated legacy.
Hadass Gold, did you have any interaction with Roger Ailes?
I unfortunately never got the opportunity to directly meet Roger Ailes, but you felt his presence throughout all of the Fox staff, especially the public relations team, and just everybody who was there. You felt like sometimes they took in some of his personality and would reflect it back. I mean, everybody there was affected by Roger Ailes from the top executives and talent all the way on down.
Well, he certainly was a hero to many in the conservative movement. Sean Hannity tweeted today, "Today America lost one of its great patriotic warriors, Roger Ailes." Matt Drudge tweeted, "Roger brought news to life, a true American classic." Laura Ingraham tweeted, "Roger Ailes founded one of the most important and successful media outlets in American history. I will miss his friendship dearly. Rest in peace." Roger Ailes died this morning at the age of 77, a towering figure in American broadcasting. I'd like to thank Hadass Gold, who covers the media for Political, for joining us. Hadass, thank you.
Thank you.
And our other guest was Brian Stelter. He's senior media correspondent for CNN, also the host of Reliable Sources. I know it's been a busy day for you, Brian. Thanks to you for joining in our conversation.
Thank you.
And I'm Tom Gelton, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.